VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and it's a bit of a melancholy week, so I'm just going to talk about this at the very start. Last week, we had the passing of Cyril Regis. This week, the passing of... The word legend gets thrown around a lot. To me, he certainly was one. Jimmy Armfield. For those who don't know, he was a tremendous footballer. He then became a broadcaster, an absolute class act. And I had the privilege of working with him several times on radio, a real gentleman. Although it's weird because the one story that's been repeated, I don't even know if it was apocryphal, but he was such a nice man that when really nice guys get a little bit sort of edgy and a little bit nasty, it resonates even more. The story I think dates from the early 90s. He was working for the BBC. Howard Wilkinson, I believe, would have been managing Leeds United at the time. And he was being questioned in the post-match press conference by the media. And Wilkinson did what most of us in the media hate when former professionals do. He basically came out and he's like, stop asking these questions. What do you guys know about football, huh? How many caps do you have? And you? And then from the back of the room, you hear Jimmy Armfield say, well, I've got 43, actually, Howard. How about you? Which I thought was heartwarming. And I say that as somebody who actually likes Howard Wilkinson and who Howard Wilkinson has been very good to. I like to think they all had a laugh about it. But like I said, a tremendous guy who was very enthusiastic, just my own memories of having known him. But of course, we have a podcast to do. With me in the studio today, it's Matt Hughes, as well as the Times' resident stats man, Bill Edgar. Later on, we'll be discussing two big moves. Watford have a new manager in place. And as we record this, Manchester United and Arsenal appear to be all set to swap Alexis Sanchez and Henrik Mkhitaryan. But we start with a side that Alexis Sanchez won't be signing for, barring some incredible last-minute turnaround, the league leaders, Manchester City. I'm going to start this off with a quote from the guy I think is the most talented football writer at the Times, and this is very, very Culkin-esque. Hughesy's looking at his at the intro and frowning because Hughesy's very much no nonsense. But I'm just going to read this. Manchester City are killing football. It is a delicate dismemberment, a beautiful butchery, but they're so good, so brilliant, so crammed with genius and artistry that the game sinks to its knees and accepts its own death. If the essence of a match is a contest in which people or teams compete against each other in a sporting context, then City are doing something else, playing something else. There is no match. Now, I was a bit hesitant to put this in, partly because I like this kind of writing, which I appreciate isn't for everybody. Hughesy's frowning again.
I'm frowning. That's just my face.
because inevitably you get backlash, like, oh, why are you in the media so obsessed with Pep? Pep can do no wrong. Blah, 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 blah. But I want to point this out. This is George Culkin's view. Now, George Culkin, for those who don't know, is a man who lives up in Newcastle, and his world is mostly Newcastle, Sunderland, to a lesser extent Middlesbrough, perhaps. He's not in the business of making Manchester City look good. He's got nothing to gain with it. I can only assume that this was his very, very honest assessment. He's certainly not trying to suck up to Pep or Khaldun or anybody like that. Bill, in some ways, you're presented, and I think it's unfair because we pigeonhole people, as sort of the polar opposite of that, even in the introduction, the resident stats man. Can you relate to this?
From a Newcastle point of view, you would say that. They played them, Manchester City, twice in the last month. And on both occasions, Newcastle were extremely defensive, now much more than the average opponents for City have been. So it's not quite the case yet that the rest of the Premier League is lying down and giving up. You know, it was just Newcastle in these two games who really took it to an extreme and did pretty much nothing from an attacking point of view. In terms of our City killing the game, well, I think we can just enjoy it for the time being. When 5 years down the line, if they're about to win the title for the fifth year in a row by 20 points, then we can start worrying about the lack of competition. But the last three seasons, they haven't won the title. They were second, fourth and third. They've only just got into this preeminence. So, and of course, it's great to watch. So I think it's really a great advert for the Premier League. So I think we should just enjoy it.
Usually, is that the bar, that they have to win it 5 years in a row by 20 points before we start worrying about it? I mean, is Culkin gotten carried away, or is he just within the context of Newcastle?
I think everyone's got carried away a little bit. I mean, they're the best team ever chat started in about October, which, although they're playing wonderful football and clearly dominant in this season, I thought was ridiculously premature. Obviously, they had the potential to become one of the greatest teams you've ever seen. Which is going to be exciting to see unfold over the next few years. But yeah, they have to back it up. I mean, Man City have won numerous titles in the Abu Dhabi era, but they haven't defended it, and Pep needs to do that, I think, before
they won those titles, they didn't play the way they play now.
No, they didn't.
When we juxtapose City with dominant teams of the past, we don't juxtapose it with Mancini's City or Pellegrini's City, do we?
That is true. We talk about the Invincibles and Liverpool team of the 80s. I mean, I think as a football team, they're probably better than all those. I did laugh.
So then you're saying they're the best?
Wow.
You just said as a football team, that's what they are.
In this month, but I think you have to earn that kind of crown.
Over time.
I think you have to have longevity, yeah.
Okay.
I think, you know, if this team plays, you know, your friend Steve Nicholls Liverpool, they beat them 5-0. Because football is just better.
Right. But then, yeah, the really depressing part is that Sam Allardyce's Everton would probably, maybe not 5-0, but, you know, they probably wouldn't get stuffed. What I find interesting here is, I mean, you talked about how defensive Newcastle were. It's interesting in terms of what's worked against City this season, because obviously Liverpool went for it. They pressed high. It was a much more attacking display from them. I mean, they were also at home and they have different players and stuff. Rafa, who obviously knows how to organize a team defensively, stop opponents from playing, he chose a different approach twice. Do you think he regrets it? I mean, would they have been better, or is it just kind of like a case of choosing your poison?
I mean, they lost 3-1 and 1-0. I mean, so on the face of it, they're not terrible results. Fair enough, to be honest. I mean, it's not great for football when a team is just does absolutely nothing until they're 2-0 down, and after about an hour they try something. But in terms of trying to get the best result, I think that was fair enough from Benitez.
Let's focus on Newcastle a little bit, because I have a feeling we'll be talking about City again this season, and probably Newcastle too. There's a proposal on the table from a group called PCP. Juxtaposed against that is Rafa's contract situation. Now, can you explain, Matt, why, if you're Ashley, you might not want to extend Rafa until you've sold the club? Are Newcastle worth more with Rafa under contract or not? Or does it not matter?
Well, they're worth more theoretically. They're a more attractive proposition.
If you get Rafa as part of the package?
Yeah. I think that's true, and that's certainly, whether it's true or not, it's certainly the Ashley perception. I was told when this latest round of talks began kind of midway through last year, they were sort of, in the various prospectuses that were sent out to people, they were touting, we have a trophy-winning manager. So Rafa was very much placed front and centre of the Newcastle sale, and Amanda Staveley's bought into that. I mean, we saw from her excellent interview with George Culkin last week that she loves Rafa, wants him to stay, wants to extend the contract. So it makes sense that Newcastle would try and tie him down, but I think it's almost, for this sale, it's too late for that now.
But can you just explain that a little bit? Because, all right, you and I probably can't relate to buying and selling football clubs, but I think a lot of our listeners can perhaps relate to buying and selling property. So if you were selling your place and you got planning permission to build an extension, obviously building the extension adds value to your property, and obviously locking in Rafa adds value to United in one way. But on the other hand, if they were to sell him without Rafa getting a new contract, it's not, you know, it's not like Rafa would disappear. He'd still be there. No, it's just that the new owners would have to negotiate. But what if the new owners don't like Rafa? What if they'd rather have somebody else? You know what I mean? Like, in some ways, you're also potentially adding a cost to it.
You are, but I don't think it adds much value. It's more sort of perception of this man, this successful manager, wants to stay at this club. It's sort of more, you know, a signal of soft power. And also, crucially, if Benitez will only extend his contract if he's given money to spend by players. So it sort of just sends out the kind of right vibes. I'm not saying that Rafa is worth 20% of Newcastle. That's ridiculous, although he probably thinks he is.
But I would assume Rafa would more likely want to stay if Amanda Staveley and those people buy the club, because presumably they'll inject more money into it, right?
Yeah, certainly in the short term.
Now, back in November, Matt, you reported that Ashley was hoping to get £380 million pounds for the club. This is a club he bought for £134 million. And what's interesting is that between 2007 and 2015, Newcastle made pre-tax profits of something like £46 million. So between the capital appreciation and between the fact that they made a profit until 2015, I think they were close to break even the year after that, and then presumably they made a loss the season after that when they were relegated. Although presumably again this year they'll probably make a profit again because he hasn't spent any money. Even if he doesn't get £380 million, he's still going to be in for an enormous payday, right? Can we kind of dispense with this idea that if you own a football club, you'll necessarily lose enormous amounts of money and you need to do it out of love and whatever else and passion? No, you can do it to make money if you're a smart businessman.
You can do it to make money, but can you do it to make money and have success? I mean, they're slightly different things. Newcastle, like Ashley Will, has made money out of Newcastle, but he's also had a tremendous amount of grief. He's incredibly unpopular and is kind of basically sick of it. So yeah, he's managed the balance sheets very well. Whether he's managed the football club well is a different question, which I think most Newcastle fans would have pretty strong views on.
So he's managed it. The argument is he's managed it badly because they've been relegated. They're still solvent as a football club, which maybe not something to be taken for granted. Yeah, I presume you know him or his people better than I do. Do you get a sense that he really does care that he gets grief, given that he doesn't live in Newcastle? Does he care what Newcastle fans on the street think of him?
I don't think he does care, no, not really. But I think he has come to a kind of realisation, acceptance that he can't, or doesn't, more to the point, doesn't have the will to sort of take them to the next level. He's run them fairly cheaply, and he's financially, they've been successful, but on the football pitch, they haven't been successful since the Pardew season with Demba Ba when they finished fifth, have they? Really, it's sort of been declined since then. And I think he hasn't got the appetite financially or otherwise.
He's not enjoying it, basically, and it's maybe taking time away from his other
businesses. Yeah, and he's trying, you know, this sale has been going on for, whatever, 6-12 months, but behind the scenes, it's been on the market for about 10 years. It's not the first time he's tried to sell, has it, you know?
If you're talking about the long-term potential of clubs, you look at the number of fans Newcastle have, certainly in terms of fans through the gate, they have 51,000 pretty much every home game. They could probably expand and increase that because they're at capacity almost all the time. If I went away for 10 years to Mars, came back and Newcastle were regulars in the top four, I wouldn't be that surprised. If it was Bolton or Swansea, then I'd be surprised. But Newcastle have got, just in terms of the size of the club, they've got potential, yeah.
Time now for our Goal of the Week segment. Now this season, with your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times, you can watch every highlight and every goal from every single game in the Premier League, the Champions League, the Europa League, and the FA Cup. And it's just £3 for a three-month trial. You don't just get goal highlights. You also get some outstanding writing and some outstanding content from our hard-working team of journalists. Now, Husey, what was your favourite goal of the weekend in the Premier League?
Well, it was Willian's, but I go for Bill's talking about that. So I go for Anthony Martial's winner for Man United. I love the ball from Lukaku, and the way Martial took it was fantastic. And it's timely, really, given who's about to sign for Manchester United and what position he plays. So it's good to see Martial respond to the Sanchez challenge.
have a feeling we'll be talking about that very shortly. Bill, you're going with Willian, and it's interesting because I've made this point before. When you look at sort of match of the day or whatever, you know, the goal of the month contenders and whatever, they're invariably somebody smacking the ball from a million yards out. This is not the kind of goal that traditionally your peeps like.
No, although Willian did indeed smash the ball in at the end, albeit from a fairly relatively close distance. But I like this a bit more than Lacazette's goal for Arsenal, which was similar, because whereas the Arsenal goal had a couple of 1-2s, both involving Ozil, Chelsea's had a 1-2-3, again twice with...
And two back heels.
Oh, yeah. Willian, Hazard, Batshuayi, and then Willian, Hazard, Batshuayi, and then Willian. So it just takes more imagination, you know, when there's three of you all involved. It's great to see that when the first person's making the pass, the third one is already anticipating what's going to happen. And that happened in a pretty tight space. And of course, as you say, two flicks to set up Willian for the outswinging finish.
Absolute peach of a goal. Now, another match this week, Southampton drew 1-1 with Spurs. Hughesy, I wrote down missed opportunity because I like the idea of Tottenham charging on and challenging for a spot in the top four. But then I look at this and I wonder, am I being a little bit harsh on them? I mean, is a draw at Southampton such a poor result?
What, Southampton, 1-11, 1-10? I mean, their form is terrible. They can't win games. They struggle to score goals. And if you look at how well Liverpool are playing, how resilient Chelsea are, how resilient Manchester United are, you know, even Arsenal played well on Saturday. So it's that battle for fourth is tough. And of all the years to miss out on the Champions League, this will be the worst for Tottenham, given the new stadium they've got to fill and given lots of players agitating for new contracts and interest, clearly, in Harry Kane and Dele Alli in particular. So they really can't afford to have another Europa League season. And if they're going to get in the top four, these are games they're going to have to win, particularly if you factor in Pochettino's poor record away against you know, the top six. So yeah, I think it is a missed opportunity, and a game where they really again showed how much they rely on Christian Eriksen. He was missed.
Did Spurs deserve more from this game, Bill?
I don't think so. I think a draw was fair enough. They certainly are dropping compared with last season. They've got 86 points. They're heading for 71 now. So it's a huge difference. And I mean, it strikes me that Dele Alli's loss of form is really crucial. You can almost see him sort of without confidence, just hoping for something, some inspiration to come to him as he's on when he gets hold of the ball. And he's certainly dropped a lot from last season. Probably their best two defenders, Danny Rose and Alderweireld, have both been out. Danny Rose sort of, you know, for quite a long time, really. So they're missing them. Dyer's passing was poor yesterday. They looked like they were a long way from really dominating as they would have dominated that sort of game last year, I think. Kane is still playing as well as ever. He's very consistent, but looks like they might struggle for top four now.
You mentioned Harry Kane there. I had to kind of smile at the weekend because there was a headline about how Real Madrid determined to smash the £200 million barrier to get Harry Kane. Which was just the only thing I thought was funny was just obviously Neymar went for on the conversion £198 million. Like, I'm just trying to imagine Florentino sitting there and saying, like, I better convert my potential offer into pounds. That would really make a statement. But no, I mean, leaving the number aside, is this just, I mean, I think most would agree that Harry Kane deserves a new deal given the level that he's playing at and what he's on now, frankly. Is he viewed the way he should be viewed? I mean, people joke about him being a four-season wonder, but at this stage, he just keeps doing it again and again and again.
Viewed by whom?
Well, I think if you put those sums on the table and you consider the fact that Manchester United have Lukaku, that Kane probably doesn't fit what City want to do, if you're talking move, you would imagine a move by one of the big clubs on the continent.
You'd have to, if he went anywhere, he would have to go abroad.
It's not going to be in England.
No way Daniel Levy would sell him anywhere in England. No, I mean, it's Real Madrid, isn't it, really? He's not.
Lewandowski moves, would you see Bayern?
Well, Bayern don't pay big money for players.
Haven't paid.
Well, what's Bayern's transfer record is surprisingly small. Is it like 30 or 40 million? Javi Martinez, maybe? 40
or Tolisso, maybe? But yeah, no, but it's not a lot.
They don't buy Galacticos. Yeah. They nick the very, very best players in Germany for free.
Exactly.
As Oli Kay wrote about well on Saturday, I thought, in the Times. So Bayern aren't players for Harry Kane. So, yeah, there isn't actually, curiously, given how good he is and how young he is and what a great bloke he is, there isn't a massive
That's good news
demand.
For Levy, then.
Yeah, it's probably Real Madrid or bust, I guess.
And I also think, given, anyway, we all have certain prejudices about certain types of players, given that it's Real Madrid and given that a lot of, given that you're still marketing stars if you're at Madrid, yeah. Right? And that's a really big part of it. Marketing Harry Kane, I mean, unless England go and win the World Cup and he's top scorer or something, to a Spanish audience, I think is a little bit tough because, you know, you look at him, he looks a little goofy. You look at his YouTube clips, and it's like, all right, he scores a ton of goals, but look, he's not going deep in the Champions League or whatever else. You know, I mean, or unless Spurs win the Champions League this year, I should point out, or do really well in it. So I think this actually, to me, suggests that Levy's in a pretty strong negotiating position.
Yeah, I think Tottenham are pretty confident for the reasons you say. I mean, obviously, he's potentially a great player.
He really is. We can take the potentially out of it.
No, I don't. I'm a Yorkshire curmudgeon, as you know.
Who is a great player right now?
Lionel Messi.
It's a list comprised of one.
In England, Aguero. Sanchez, Kane's got to do it, but yeah, you've got to De Bruyne is showing he can be, but again, he's whatever 23 and has done it for 2 years. I demand more. Pogba's not a great player; he's a very talented player.
Can you imagine having Matt Hughes as your boss? Seriously,
hey. Great. I mean, okay. By your definition, there are hundreds of great footballers. Harry Kane is, yeah, he's world class, but he hasn't done it at a tournament. Okay. He hasn't won anything.
David May won lots at Manchester United.
But there are many different metrics. Anyway, the point being, he's not... If you're replacing Cristiano Ronaldo, which ostensibly that is what Real Madrid have to do, it's a tough sell, so I agree with you.
Bill, Southampton have been a model club for a long time. They're sitting on £75 million of Virgil van Dijk money. What would you do with it?
I'd probably get another striker. Charlie Austin is a... excellent finisher, but he's had his injury problems. He was out for half last season.
The poor man's Harry Kane.
Yeah, but, you know, good enough for Southampton. Shane Long is a good player, but his finishing's not been great. Gabby Adini had a great start when he came to Southampton, 6 goals in the first 4 games. Now he just pretty much stopped scoring. So really, they need a finisher. That was the problem last season. And again this season.
£75 million will get you a pretty good striker.
Yeah,
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Love the game? Then don't miss The Game Daily. It's your lunchtime update from football's finest writers, and it's only at thetimes.co.uk. So early in the season, Watford were geniuses for getting Marco Silva. They were, I think they were as high as what, like fifth, sixth in the table at one point?
Yeah.
Then Everton come in and... they want Silva. There's a dispute over compensation. Watford don't want to let him go. And since then, Watford not been quite as good. They're slipping down the table. The club actually issued a statement coming out and saying this, that, look, since the approach, we weren't as good. Marco Silva was, it was an unwanted approach. Marcos, we didn't let him go. And it had a knock-on effect on the team. Now Javi Gracia is coming in. But do you have any sympathy for anybody involved here? For Marco Silva, for not being able to get his dream move to Goodison? For Everton not being able to get Marco Silva and being stuck with Allardyce? For Watford now having to sack Silva? I'm assuming, you know, you're not often too sympathetic anyway.
It's kind of the perfect storm, really. I don't have sympathy for Marco Silva, really, because he'd been pointed on a 2 or 3 year contract, I think 2 years, and after 9 games he says, I want to go, and they say no. But he doesn't say, okay, I respect that, it's fine. He just keeps pushing.
He did keep pushing, didn't he?
He kept pushing, he was agitating behind the scenes, and if you talk to people at Watford since then, although obviously he's, you know, he hasn't downed tools, they're convinced that his sort of commitment just hasn't been the same. And as someone put it to me last night, he just wasn't doing the work. And the players have sort of sensed that. And it's the sort of thing that's pretty hard to quantify, but if you talk to people who are at Watford every day, they you can read things that aren't there, I guess, but they think the players picked up on it, and there's just, you know, a little dialing down in the intensity and the commitment. And if that happens, you lose games. And there are lots of sort of, you know, there's no sort of smoking gun, but there's evidence and stats which indicates they might be onto something. They conceded a lot of late goals. They've thrown away lots of winning positions.
What's Silva's version of events here? What would you say?
Silva would say that the club haven't backed him. He didn't sign the players he wanted to sign.
What, in the summer?
In the summer, and now, since in the last 3 weeks, he wants to sign Islam Slimani from Leicester. It's not happened. It's not going to happen because he's too expensive, frankly.
You have Gray, you have Okaka, you have
record signing, yeah.
And you have Troy Deeney, yeah.
Well, he doesn't like Deeney. I mean, this is the problem is, you have a manager who's signed up to a model of working, and he doesn't agree with it, basically. He seemed to be unhappy with the players he had, and instead of accepting that, he's continued to agitate and push behind the scenes. And that, basically, it's, in the short version, is the relationship between club and manager has broken down, and Everton was the catalyst, but if it hadn't been Everton, it could well have been something else later on. So while he's a very good coach and clearly has talent, I kind of think his managing up, the way he sort of carries himself, is a problem, and that might explain why he's had 5 jobs in 4 years. He never hangs around.
Bill,
this sort of thing doesn't happen very often. When managers of smallish Premier League clubs get poached, it's usually in the summer, so it's quite relatively rare for them to club to come after somebody like this in mid-season, so it's hard to look for previous examples. But I remember Martin O'Neill in 1998 was at Leicester doing really well, and Leeds wanted to speak to him, and Leicester refused to let him speak. And he was really annoyed, and he had a press conference saying that he was fed up with Leicester for not letting him speak to Leeds. He was really public about it, but they promptly, in the next 6 game, won 4 and drew 2, and they finished 10th, so he overcame his disappointment.
I will say this, and regular listeners will know, I'm not a big fan of Martin O'Neill, but I will always say the guy is honest, which you can't say of many managers in this business. And he's a professional. He does the best job. I remember that incident well. And I was like, when he got the press conference, I'm like, well, wait a minute. So you're actually different from all the other managers who would have happily gone and chatted to Leeds day and night, you know, behind their back. But you're actually waiting for permission, you know? Yeah. I mean, like I said, like, you can be critical, and I've been very critical of him in the past. But in terms of integrity, you know, I think Martin O'Neill is really a model there. Unless you're the manager of Manchester United or Manchester City or a handful of other clubs, yeah, you are at a stepping stone. You know, every club is a stepping stone. And I think we need to wrap our heads around that. The other big news, which has been rumbling for a long time, and as we record this, it's not official yet, although everybody's been told that it's pending a medical, is this extraordinary swap deal between Alexis Sanchez, who would have been out of contract at Arsenal on June 30th, and Henrik Mkhitaryan. Now, there's a lot of people wondering, who are the winners and losers? I don't think we have any clarity on the numbers. Those numbers that were widely reported last week, whereby Sanchez would be getting £500,000 a week, I wasn't able to stand them up. I don't know who has. I don't think those numbers are right. I think, and I'm just purely an educated guess, my guess is Alexis Sanchez probably makes somewhere maybe in the 300 to 350 range with bonuses. And obviously he's getting a big signing on bonus as well. But I don't think he's going to be making much more than what you would expect. I think probably he's probably making a little less than what Zlatan made when he came over. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought he'd be on hugely more than Pogba, for example.
No. Although Pogba's not an enormous deal, right? Is it 200k, I think, Pogba.
A lot of bonuses there.
But he does have a lot of bonuses in there. So, and obviously we don't know what Mkhitaryan's getting, but what we do know is that Mkhitaryan was on a massive whack, again, relative to being Henrik Mkhitaryan.
He'll be the highest played player at Arsenal for now.
I think it's something like 170, 180 yeah. grand a week. We'll get to the footballing impact, but in terms of the squad balance impact, is this the kind of thing where, you know, the good players at the clubs will all come knocking on the door for new deals now? Or
at which club?
Well, both clubs.
I don't think so. It's a bit different to Tottenham, where compared to the market, there's a big group that are underpaid. I don't think many people at United, certainly the top players, would argue that they are, you know, underpaid. They've been good players for a long time. I don't think one makes a difference. I think with City it was slightly different because of the De Bruyne issue. Then renegotiating the contract with the young guy who is widely seen as their best player. So if you parachute Sanchez in on, you know, double or a third again of what they're going to give him, then that's a potential problem. I don't think Manchester United have anyone who's in that situation. Pogba is on a long-term deal. Lukaku's on a long-term contract.
Pogba will have finished the second... I mean, this summer, Pogba will have finished the second year of his deal, right? And he'll have 3 years left.
Yeah.
And if he plays the way he's played in the last month, he can say, well, hang on a minute.
But he would have got
I'm
that
a lot
money.
Better
he
than
he
Alexis.
He would have got that money anyway, I think. I don't. Yeah. I might be wrong. I don't perceive
that,
a huge
that is a good point. You would imagine. And the other point with the Sanchez...
You negotiate with Red Woodward if you're a good footballer.
Yeah, that's true. But the other point with the Sanchez money and the Sanchez deal is Mkhitaryan's current salary is, I'm guessing, is going to be, you know, like we said, it's a big wage that he was on because it was a Mino Raiola deal and whatnot. Between Mkhitaryan not being there anymore and Zlatan's wages coming off the wage bill at the end of the season, Bill, you've got a lot of wiggle room to give Sanchez a lot of money and also re-up Pogba.
Yeah, certainly. And it's well worth spending the money on a forward. And Sanchez is completely proven, as Matt says, a great player. You know, there's almost a guarantee he's going to be, he'll be a title-winning standard player at Manchester United. And I think they need it because so far you've got Martial and Rashford, who potentially they could get there. Lukaku, I don't think he's quite going to get there. Lingard's still got a way to go.
What lineup do you think, I mean, if somebody watches United a lot, what do you think Mourinho is going to do? How's he going to line them up?
I imagine he'll have one of Martial and Rashford at least in the lineup, and they've done so much better on the left than elsewhere that he'll put them there, which means Sanchez will go. And I think Sanchez is good enough to play on the left or the right, number 10 or striker. Maybe he'll put him as number 10 behind Lukaku. Could put him on the right and have three up front. So you have, say, Herrera, Matic and
Pogba. What do you think
Pogba.
He should do?
Well, I mean, they're two options, and it'll change depending on who the opponents are. What do I think he should do? I think United have better balance with three in midfield, so I'd have Herrera, Matic and Pogba right to left in midfield, and then Sanchez, Lukaku and Martial as the front three.
And then maybe this summer you go and you try to upgrade Herrera and get a centre-back.
Yeah.
Makes sense to you?
Yeah, I think Sanchez is probably more comfortable in the middle, really. I mean, you need to give him, what's interesting is you need to give him freedom. He ain't going to be running the channels in the Jose way. So if you play him wide, you're creating a potential problem. He's not going to be Ashley Young.
But
that's my thing, right? But people have had this whole idea of United and the flying wingers and all this nonsense, which hasn't been the case for a long time. Might the best solution, if you've got Alexis, to play something like a Christmas tree formation and...
Or a 3-5-2, and he's one of the two off Lukaku, and you have the...
Possibly. Problem with the 3-5-2 is then you got to find another centre-back, and I think all those guys, are other than Bayer, are pretty... Yeah. But if you play a Christmas tree, you can have him and Rashford or Martial, or if you want to go a little bit more defensive, Lingard, behind Lukaku. And if he's played Shaw quite a bit recently, right? If now, you know, Shaw's not on the naughty step anymore, between Shaw and Valencia, you've got really, really attacking fullbacks as well. And you leave space for Pogba to break from midfield. That's a pretty good setup, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll vary a lot. I think you'll play a lot of home games, and I think away from home, you might have to do things slightly differently. It's a hard man to manage, Alexis Sanchez. He'll want to play every game in 90 minutes. If he doesn't, there'll be tantrums, you know? So
Mourinho is the ideal man, because if he thinks you're in the best 11, he'll stick you in every minute of the season, yeah, basically, apart from the really irrelevant games.
I want to get to Mkhitaryan in a second, but first I want to turn on this, because there's been almost like a backlash, I think, from some people against Alexis Sanchez, that he was somehow destined to be reunited with Pep and it would have been the good thing to do. And instead, he's being greedy and he's not showing a lack of ambition to, quote, win things, which is, you know, one of my pet peeves. And by joining United. And look, there's no doubt he's making more money at United and his agent's making more money at United. All right, that's understood. But that kind of really, really bugs me. Because first of all, if Alexis Sanchez had moved to City, he would have won the Premier League as a passenger, because they're going to win. I mean, you could have joined, no disrespect, Bill, Manchester City, and you would have won the Premier League this year, right? As a passenger. But secondly, I look at it from... I think there's a strong footballing argument here as well. What you said, Matt, Alexis Sanchez isn't going to go and run the channel, and he's not going to go up and down the wing. If he moves to Manchester City, who have a very organized, very schematic way of playing, he can either play on the wing, where he has to compete with guys like Leroy Sané and Raheem Sterling, who are younger, faster, tactically more disciplined than he is, or he can play as a center forward, where he has to compete to the guy you think is the only great player in the Premier League, Sergio Aguero. And I thought maybe this was setting up Aguero to move in the summer, which may yet happen. But you got to compete with Aguero, and you have to compete with Gabriel Jesus. So, and on top of that, you've got the Pep factor, and Pep persuaded him. He had a chance to go to Manchester City when he left Udinese, who City were offering more money back then. He followed his heart. He went to, you know, the quote-unquote bigger club at the time. He went to Barcelona. We know where that ended up, right? He was there for 3 years. Pep left after a season. You know, he was good, but he never peaked at Barcelona in any way, shape, or form, and he actually struggled in Pep's system. Now, Pep's system has changed since then, but still, to me, I look at this at United, and United are devoting an enormous amount of resources to me between now and the end of my career. So they're vested in me succeeding. I'll be given every chance. If I win something there, in some ways, it's more meaningful, because this is a club that has not had success over the past 3.5 years. And so I'll be building towards something than riding on the coattails of a finished project. Am I giving him too much of a benefit of the doubt?
I'm kind of half with you. I never really understood why Man City wanted him, really. I don't see where he fits. I agree with that.
It was to shift Aguero in the summer, I think.
Yeah.
I think there was a sense that Aguero, after 7 years, would want to maybe go to Spain, try something else. I think that was the thing also with Pep, you know, with the whole thing about his pressing, not pressing, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I think that was, that's how it made sense.
I see Sanchez as being similar, if not worse, in terms of a difficult character to manage. If you're struggling to manage Aguero, I don't see how you...
But he's more predisposed to pressing than Aguero is.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I don't see much evidence of that. I think he does when he wants to.
And I watched a lot of him with Chile.
Yeah,
he really is, believe me.
But not always. At Arsenal, he's erratic. Anyway, that's a different point. So now, bottom line is, if City come in this month, he joins City. They haven't, so I don't blame him for joining Manchester United. I think it's I don't think he's particularly greedy or mercenary. I think ultimately City aren't in the market now, and he doesn't want to stay at Arsenal. So, and he obviously makes a lot of money. He makes more money from moving now than he does in the summer, possibly. So I don't have a problem with him choosing United. I'd kind of slightly, well, I just don't agree with this narrative that has come in somewhere that, oh yeah, I heard someone say yesterday that he's going United because he can be viewed as a game changer and a catalyst, and it means more if you're in at the ground floor. I think that's nonsense. I mean, footballers just want to win stuff. He's not thinking about how he's going to be perceived in 20 years in the pubs of Stretford. You know, he just wants to make money and win stuff. He doesn't care that he could be seen as, you know.
But surely
someone described yesterday as it could be a Cantona-esque signing, which is just nonsense. Who knows? But I mean, he might be, but he might not be. It's not. Footballers don't think like that, I don't think.
I think United are further forward than they were when Cantona signed. So, I mean, he certainly could be a catalyst. As I say, I don't think any of the front four really have been playing well enough to win the title over all season. So, I mean, he will be a catalyst. But, yeah, I take Matt's point that whether he's thinking about that, I doubt very much.
All right, now, Matt, walk me through Mkhitaryan and why he had to be part of this deal.
Ask your friend. I don't know, really. I guess it enables Arsenal to, you know, claim they haven't been shafted by their rivals when they clearly have. All this, it's a great deal for both parties. I couldn't disagree more. It's a great deal for Manchester United. It's a great deal for Alexis Sanchez. It could be a reasonable deal for Arsenal, but who knows?
It's a great deal for Mkhitaryan.
It's a great deal for Ange Mkhitaryan, yeah.
And yeah, but who knows,
is he the player Arsenal need? No. Is he the player they were looking for? No. Will he succeed there? Who knows? So it's ludicrous to say just because you've got a big name player.
Yeah,
bottom line is, United have got rid of a player they didn't want and got one they really did, and Arsenal have lost a player they really wanted to keep and got one who wasn't anywhere on their radar. So it's bizarre, but it sort of sums up Arsenal's kind of weakness in terms of transfers and strategies, if you ask me.
I'm
a cynic, so.
You are a cynic. I like to think that it's much, much more simple. I like to think that it's Mino Raiola sitting there thinking like, obviously if this other dude comes, things are going to get even tougher and nastier for Mickey. Let me see if I can insert him in the deal. And I think from United's perspective, they probably at first were like, oh no, look, cash only. Well, you know, like 30 million, we got this, Mino, you know. And he said, no, because if we don't figure out a way to do this, then, you know, maybe Pogba and Lukaku might become really, really unhappy this summer with you, Ed, and there might be some issues there. He's what he's paid to do, which is to look out for his clients, right? And he says, let's put a deal where you all benefit. Mickey leaves, takes his wages with him. And this way, like, as we discussed before, then, you know, you have that opportunity to go and offset that. To offset Sanchez's wages. And I think from Arsenal's perspective, you're saying he was a player they didn't want. I'm not saying he's a player they didn't want because he's a very good player. But he's 29 years old. He's going to earn close to what Alexis Sanchez would have signed for had he extended his contract 18 months ago. And I think this is a point that people forget a little. It gives him a little bit more leverage over Ozil, possibly. Ozil's no longer indispensable should they want to try to extend him. But goodness me, I heard somebody say, well, you know, Mkhitaryan is a 70 million pound player in this market. If Mkhitaryan were a 70 million pound player on those wages in this market, I would assume that Manchester United would have sold him to somebody for 70 million.
It's a huge gamble by Arsenal because he's not settled properly in the Premier League. Obviously he did well in Germany, but Arsenal now hoping that he suddenly finds his feet in this same foreign country, and even if he does, well, that's not the sort of player they're after. They've got enough attacking midfielders. They're fine. They need to strengthen elsewhere. They're not going to win the title, right, as it stands.
You say that, but Arsenal fans will come after me if I don't call you on this. When you say they have enough attacking midfielders, who are you talking about? Ozil, who's leaving in 6 months. Alexis, who's already left. Alex Iwobi. Who are you talking about? Who are all these attacking midfielders?
Wilshere's brilliant, creative.
Come on. Be serious.
I'm being serious. What do you mean? Haven't you been watching the last 6 weeks or whenever he's been fit throughout his career? He's a great creative player.
It's putting a lot of faith in Jack Wilshere that, you know, he's finally turned the corner and he's, as Wenger might have said, he's like a new signing, right? You presume Wenger is invested in Mkhitaryan and wants to make it work with Mkhitaryan. You presume Mkhitaryan was Wenger's choice, or it wasn't all just your buddy Sven Mislintat.
Well, there's definitely an interesting Dortmund subplot, isn't there?
And possibly with Aubameyang too.
Sven Mislintat arrives in November, and 2 months later they sign 2 players from Dortmund.
Well, have they signed Aubameyang?
No, but they're talking to them. And
why? Can you actually, you know what? Why are on this? Let's just again. I don't know. I don't,
because he's available.
No, seriously, this Aubameyang thing, I don't get this. First of all, Aubameyang's been young for so long. He ain't young anymore. What is
29.
He? He's 29 years old, right? He's going to cost you an absolute whack of money. You're going to get in a situation where Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan will just get old at the same time. Yeah. And Ozil, if you extend him. He's somebody who's had serious disciplinary issues in the past. I think 4 times. There's 4 games he's missed the last 11 months for disciplinary reasons or because his head wasn't right. He scores a ton of goals on a team that just streams forward aimlessly. And he's a very good player. But you just spent 50 million on a center forward. And I know people say, oh, but Alba can play on the wing. Yeah, he's so good. He hasn't played on the wing in 4 years. What generally tends to happen is that players who play on the wing and then they come inside and they start playing center forward, they kind of enjoy playing center forward because they're scoring a ton of goals and it's more fun than tracking back and running back on the wing. I don't understand. Are they thinking Aubameyang Lacazette partnership with Mickey in the hole? Is that the plan?
I don't know what they're thinking.
I mean, are they thinking anything?
I mean, Arsenal haven't played 2 centre-forwards since about 2008. Wenger suddenly abandoned it and that was it.
Alan Smith and Ian Wright did pretty well together.
Yeah, even further back. So I'd be surprised if he was planning to use 2 centre.
So what?
I mean, it could be just an admission that Lacazette hasn't been up to it. I mean, he's not.
Has Lacazette been that bad?
He's not been terrible, but I don't think
it's been 6 months.
Yeah, okay.
Just burn Lacazette at the stake and get some other.
No, he's not that bad, but he's definitely not as good as they surely were expecting.
What were they expecting from Lacazette?
More involvement, more than nine goals by January 22nd, I guess.
And more involvement in the general play. Often he's kind of he's just not involved.
I watched him play at Chelsea in the Carabao Cup in a very sort of one-sided 0-0 that Chelsea dominated, and I felt for him. But him and Morata looked like they needed therapy, not 90 minutes of football.
How about some quick hits? Chelsea blitz Brighton early and hard on their way to a 4-0 win. Hughie, is Conte rather underappreciating Willian? Or, as Cascarino suggests, is he right to look for other options up front, like Ashley Barnes?
Well, he certainly needs other options up front because Morata hasn't scored in 5 or 6 games.
He's been playing in the last couple of games.
Well, he missed 1 game.
Yeah, which where he would have scored, presumably, against Brighton. But
well, maybe not, given the way he's been playing. Bipashwai, he doesn't fancy. So yeah, they seem to be looking for every journeyman target man all over Europe, from Andy Carroll to Crouch to Ashley Barnes, if you believe the story that came out on Sky Sports last night. I'm not convinced by that myself. Those strikers I've just mentioned all have something else in common, which Antonio Conte clearly appears to value in footballers. Age.
Anthony Martial scores a fine goal as Manchester United outlast Burnley and get a big away win. Bill, is this the beginning of Martial kicking on and living up to the hype?
He's been there 2.5 years. You'd have hoped he'd have made a bit more of an impression, I guess. But
he's doing it now.
Pardon?
Is he doing it now? Is he turning the corner?
I wouldn't quite say that. He's looking like he might do. I need to give it another couple of months of good form before we really think he's definitely going to be a long-term United player.
You know, I realize, like, you'd be the worst boss in the world, and Bill is impossible to please. Seriously. Arsenal thrashed Crystal Palace 4-1, and Hughie, I don't think it's a coincidence that they reverted to a back four at the other end, and Lauren Koscielny was back in. Funny, when you've got good players and a formation that suits you, you tend to do a lot better. Please tell me that this back three nonsense is done with at Arsenal, because it upsets me and offends me.
Chambers, Holding, and Mustafi is not great, is it? So I'm with you. It was a bizarre kind of late season experiment last year that did actually pretty well, didn't it, in terms of results. And this year he's been in and out, but I would be inclined to agree that 43-1 to suit Arsenal better. I mean, they can barely pick four good defenders, never mind five.
Nice start from Paul Lambert at Stoke, who beat Huddersfield 2-0. Bill, what did Lambo First Blood Part 2 do differently from Sparky?
I'm not sure he did an awful lot different. He had Shawcross and Peters back, so he was lucky to, because the defence has been a mess recently, the latter days of Mark Hughes. I mean, Huddersfield at home is possibly the easiest fixture at the moment, so let's wait to see how he gets
you
on.
You see the face he made.
I don't think there was an awful lot different. I think Mark Hughes is a bit unlucky. Several games they were unfortunate to lose recently. I wouldn't personally have got rid of Mark Hughes anyway.
Paul Lambert just never gets any love from everybody. You don't like Martial, you don't like Lambert. We'll see if you do better with the next question.
He was brilliant at Norwich and Colchester.
Everton are held at home by West Bromwich Albion, and Big Sam Allardyce says he's, quote, worried by the drain in confidence. Hughesy, is he right to be concerned? Should he maybe be concerned by the fact that Marco Silva presumably is now on the market again?
I don't think he should be concerned for this season, but in the summer, yeah, who knows? I mean, Sam had a great impact, didn't he? But last 6 weeks, it's faded away, and his 1,000th game wasn't quite the celebration he would have hoped for. Between sort of 18th and 8th will be like 6 points at the end of the season. So it's just how you finish, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, the best thing you can do is have your blip now and then finish like a train.
But did you expect Everton to be playing better than they are playing?
Not really. I expected them to get better results, but I think there's been a sort of slight reversion to the mean after the sort of Sam effect and
all those draws. And
yeah, I think they'll be okay.
Claude Puel and Leicester roll to another win, 2-0 over Watford. Bill, any theories about why he was so derided last season at Southampton, but is doing so much better at Leicester? Or are you going to tell me that, like Paul Lambert and Anthony Martial, you're really not impressed with him whatsoever?
No, I love watching Leicester. I must say, they're a really entertaining team, the high-speed counter-attacks. Last season at Southampton, he did well. They were eighth or top of a whole close bunch of teams, close on points, but they got to the League Cup final. They are unlucky not to beat Manchester United there, and I think people got so frustrated by their inability to score, especially at home, that the crowd got against them. And as it was what I touched on earlier, it was just the finishing that was the problem. I don't think they were playing too badly, they weren't too dull as it happened, so I think he's generally done well in England.
Gab, one for you. You wrote about agent fees today. What's the big deal?
The big deal to me is, I mean, I went off the numbers in the annual UEFA benchmarking report. Fascinating reading. 126 pages.
Had a quiet week.
Backed with, yes, exactly. Basically, there were 32 deals between 2013 and 2016 worth more than 1 million euros in transfer fees, where the agent commission was more than 50%. In some cases, it was like 100%. To me, I think there are some situations when perhaps you can justify it, but there aren't very many. And, you know, even you think of all the bile that your friend Mino Raiola got over his 41 million he made off the Pogba deal, but guess what? That was less than 50% of the transfer fee. There were many more which were more lopsided. And again, there will be situations where somebody's coming to the end of a contract, so he moves for very little money. So maybe you can justify this, but I think we need more transparency in football. I know it's a boring subject, but sunlight is the best disinfectant. And anybody who's done this job has heard all sorts of scare stories, not about people making lots of money, because, again, I have no problem with it, but things like conflict of interest, things like bungs, like corruption. I would hope that a headline number like this might actually be a catalyst for maybe some meaningful change, because all those numbers are already there in the FIFA TMS system.
Hello, I am Paddy Bombert, and I'm here with Charlie Scott.
Hello there.
And we are The Sweeper, the fantasy football tipping service brought to you by The Times. It was an interesting week this week. What caught your eye, Charlie?
Oh, Sergio Aguero. I mean, I'm not quite sure how much he touched that first one, but he'll take it. That's a perfect hat trick. He scored 17 points with those three goals against Newcastle, and, I mean, Newcastle must hate the sight of him. in 11 league games against them, he's had a hand in 16 goals, 14 goals and 2 assists. I mean, it's just poor Geordies. Elsewhere, Nacho Monreal with the best 33 minutes of fantasy football I've ever seen. He picked up 16 points after getting 2 assists and a goal before being replaced by Maitland-Niles at half-time in Arsenal's win.
That was a bit strange, wasn't it?
Never seen anything like it.
Speaking of defenders, I was actually... Phil Jones caught my eye for very different reasons. He was not so dramatic, but very solid. He seems to be an absolute magnet for bonus points.
Yeah.
Every time United keep a clean sheet and score fewer than 2 goals, he basically just gets all 3.
Really?
And you know, they've got a couple of slight testing fixtures coming up, but you know, when it's a Mourinho team, you can pretty much trust them to keep a certain number of clean sheets, and it's sort of getting to the point where you can't really afford to be without it at the moment, I think. And I guess on the subject of Man United as well, there's one thing which worth looking forward to in a few weeks' time. We have the Carabao Cup semi-finals, second legs this week, and it's going to have an impact on game week 28, which is just a few weeks down the line. There is a good chance that Man City, Arsenal, Man United and Chelsea won't have a Premier League fixture that week, depending, of course, who's in the final. But if it's Chelsea, Man City, then that is what's going to happen. So it's worth having a plan for that. Obviously, those are teams where you're going to have plenty of players from those teams in your fantasy squad. So probably weaning yourself off a couple of those teams, or just make sure you have your free hit chip up your sleeve just to be ready for that one.
Yeah, I was going to say free hit, probably the perfect time to play that. My squad is basically those 4 teams. I don't know if I've got maybe Arnautovic, and that's about it. Worth looking forward to that one.
Speaking of cup football, it's the FA Cup this weekend. So no email on Friday morning from us, but we'll be back on Tuesday morning, I believe, with the next round of Premier League tips. You can sign up for free at thetimes.co.uk/fantasyfootball.
Right, that's all we've got time for today. Many, many thanks to my guests, Matt Hughes and the excellent Bill Edgar. Remember, it's just £3 for a 3-month trial. Just search the Times online, and this season you can access highlights of every game in the Premier League, the Champions League, the Europa League, and the FA Cup. And in addition to all that, what actually matters even more to me is the excellent content that you get from our writers, not just in football, but across the spectrum, mostly in football. Yeah, although that Mike Atherton's really good if you're into cricket. You think you might make it as a sports writer? Yeah, no. Shame about Owen Slott and those other guys, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Rugby jocks.
We're going to be back next Monday when it's the FA Cup fourth round weekend, Newport versus Tottenham and Yeovil versus Manchester United. I wish you could all see Bill Edgar's face light up as he contemplates the magic of the cup.
The game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.